Welcome aboard, world. Deadline Live, the 26th day of January 2005. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator and radio gun. We are here 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. So glad you could join us this Wednesday. Well, we have a very interesting show for you today. And I say that imploring you to come to the table today with your most open mind, because what we're going to be discussing is something called the Disclosure Project, headed by Dr. Stephen Greer. What is the Disclosure Project? Well, this is a consortium of ex-government types and very high-placed, very knowledgeable people wanting to disclose to you, the public, the truth and facts about extraterrestrial life and unidentified flying objects. It's a very controversial subject, but it's a very important subject. Part of what we will be speaking about today is the militarization of space. Now, this is something I know that I will be agreeing with on my guest. Not sure how much else, but I'm going to be skeptical, but not irrational. I'm going to keep an open mind. And we're going to put some hard questions to these people that have been on Coast to Coast and Rents and a number of these types of shows. So this breaks a little bit from our usual MO here, folks. If you're new to listening to the program, obviously you don't know what we do, but we cover news and try to decode the news. We are, I think to put it in a word, in a capsule, anti-globalization, anti-one-world government, if we have any agenda whatsoever. I guess that would be it. But today's show is going to take a little bit of a different turn, so I'm going to need you people to come in today with complete open minds, or it might be advised for you to turn your radio off, at least for the next 2 hours until the next program comes up to the plate. Those of you who feel extremely judgmental about these types of things won't be able to make it through the first part of my interview, where I will allow my guest Stephen Greer to tell us what he knows regarding the governments of the world hiding this this technology, which could provide free energy for the world, this technology, which, of course, can be used for military purposes and for surveillance purposes and for putting together the police state. So there's a lot to this, folks. And again, I just implore you to be skeptical, but not irrational. Keep an open mind. Deadline Live, Jack Blood. We'll be right back after these messages. You gotta love the people in France. I know that most Americans love the good people of France. That's why they eat freedom fries and freedom toast. And they love us, too. If you've ever been to France, as I have, you'll know how much they love you, Americans. But anyway, they've recently proposed an international tax to fight AIDS. This AIDS thing is becoming quite a popular industry, I have to say. Now, again, my heart goes out to all of the people that have it legitimately, but or HIV. But you know, we've done a lot of research on this. We've done entire programs on it with people like the esteemed Dr. Leonard Horowitz and others, who kind of cut through the BS, so to speak. But this is really becoming a huge industry. Of course, I read a story yesterday how Bill Gates, along with an entire government, also putting $1 billion into this AIDS fight, and also working as a subtext to that to vaccinate 90% of our children. On that note, Tony Blair says that the U.S. needs to integrate with the world, getting a little bit critical on his buddy George W. Bush. It seems like we are going headlong into this new world order. I'm sorry. You know, that's the wrong term, isn't it, folks? The world order. There's not much new about it, unfortunately. Our show today will, of course, touch on that subject. You know, there are many ways to get the populations of the earth to subjugate to this world order, this one world government, globalization, a global state, a global union. It's interesting, when this country was first founded, you know, they called it a union, but really what you had was a bunch of different countries. The country of Massachusetts, the country of New York, the country of Texas, the Republic of Texas. Varying republics locked into a union, which it took a while, depending on your point of view. It took a while, but ultimately the states' rights were superseded by the union. This is what we see now in the European Union, where every move to put together a one army, one language, one coin, leading a cashless society, of course, one religion, potentially, one constitution, one leader, one governor. So it's not hard to imagine, as these unions join under the banner of a global union, that it will just be a matter of time before, again, the states or the countries are superseded by the, quote, union. That's why a couple of months ago I was talking to Desi Andrews, who does the program weekly with John Stadtmiller here, the show airing right after ours on Republic Broadcasting Network. If you haven't heard Desi Andrews before, well, she's a very interesting woman, extremely well-researched. And I said something about, well, we've got to save the union. She said, no, the union's bad. God, you ever noticed on Drudge how you can... I'm completely locked in. I've got to shut down the computer now. Thanks, Drudge. Appreciate that, buddy. You don't have to worry about that at jackblood.com. In either case, I digress. So part of what we're going to be talking about today with this disclosure project and other information that comes out like this, such as the information by John Lear, such as the information by Bill Cooper. Now, many of you know Bill Cooper. His book, Beyond the Pale Horse, is chock full of government documents and firsthand accounts, firsthand eyewitnesses to potential alien technology and an alien presence here. One of the things that Bill Cooper says in his book is, though, just one line, you have to read the whole book and focus, and you'll find it. This could all be disinformation. In other words, the people he was working for and with, that being the U.S. government and the military, could have very well put this all out as misinformation. And it's not hard when you think about it. So objectively, we have to look at this as potentially what we face. And why would that be? Well, of course, you know, if you go back to Nazi Germany, they had these machines called Foo Fighters. Some called them, I believe, Kraut Globes. In either case, as the war ended and roughly 1,500 of the top Nazi physicists and doctors and torture masters were brought into the United States under Project Paperclip, it's not hard to imagine that this type of technology could have been usurped and, of course, used by the victor. To the victor go the spoils. Now, there are a number of things that are very alarming here. How Gorbachev fits into this whole thing, how Reagan fits into this whole thing, how Star Wars fits into this whole thing. Because whether or not you believe in UFOs, and really all we're talking about here is an unidentified flying object, so if it's unidentified, it could be military, it could be extraterrestrial or extragalactical. So you don't know. I mean, when you're talking about extraterrestrial life, that could be different. But again, separate that from strange genetically engineered projects, gene splitting and other things, DNA research, etc. But again, I digress. There's definitely a black budget operation going on to control space. That is highly documented, of course, in the Space Preservation Act and other forms of legislation, and by many very good researchers around the world. But most of these researchers, including Bruce Gagnon or Noam Chomsky or whoever, it always ends in the same thing. We need to come together, we need to disarm, and quit fighting over these borders and integrate into a one-world government. I mean, everything sounds perfect right up to that point. I can follow along, I can agree, and I can see how this is a major threat to the survival of this planet and the people on it. You know, one of the main things is, well, who will own space? Well, I think that's already been determined. In fact, many have made the case, and I think aptly so, that the Gulf War was the first space war. That being the technology used for the Gulf War. You know that 90% of the targets were hit immediately using satellite and space technology. The other 10% were just kind of pecked and played with like a cat or a kitten plays with a ball of yarn, just to really test out all of this technology. And this was one of the prime reasons, I believe, for going to war in the Gulf and hooking up that phony war in 1991 was to test out these space weapons. Kosovo could have very well been the second space war. And, of course, Afghanistan being the third, the newest war in Iraq being the fourth. And God only knows who's next. So who owns space? I think it might already be too late. Now, of course, the anti-American people out there, people again like Noam Chomsky, and sorry, Noam, I have to mention your name here in this phrase, and others, you know who they are. Even those who just haven't done their homework, who are out of the loop, who think that the New World Order is the United States, that this is imperialism, believe that the United States owns space. They have put together these black budgets in order to hoodwink the rest of us, using Star Wars and other systems to do that. And while that has happened, to say that it's the United States and not global financing and not global interest involved in this is to be, I believe, ignorant of many of the facts. Looking at one piece of the puzzle and not the entire puzzle. Looking at the smaller picture and not the bigger picture. So that's important. Who will own space? Well, I think that might have already been determined. Of course, China is now working very hard with the technology that, again, we have given them, the globalists have given them, to etch out their little corner of space. But what's more important is the programs and projects set up to determine who can leave Earth and who can't. Now, again, with some of this, quote, technology that's available, whether it is man-made and hidden or whether it is captured by aliens and hidden, I guess doesn't really make a difference. The fact is that much of that is being used, and much of that we don't know about. In fact, many people have speculated that we don't know what's going to happen 20 years from now. Let me rephrase that. We are 20 years behind of knowing what the basic technologies are. So take the technology you have today and exponentially multiply that by 20 years. And, of course, as you know, we go faster and faster and faster every year. It is beyond human comprehension. This is what's at stake. Again, a threat to survival. I'm going to read you a few quotes. When we come back, we're going to paint an appropriate picture for you, and then Stephen Greer from the Disclosure Project will be joining us in just about 10 minutes. Should be interesting, folks. Stay tuned. Jack Blood here with you, Deadline Live, this 26th day of January 2005. This next gentleman who will be joining us is probably one of the more controversial people in the world, on the planet today. What he brings to the table is a vast knowledge and experience working with the government and government programs. And, well, he's from the Disclosure Project. You can go to their website at disclosureproject.org. Follow along with me. His name is Dr. Stephen Greer. And I think the best thing to do is we'll just have him come on and he can tell us who he is and what they're doing. We'll get started in that vein. Dr. Stephen Greer, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you, and you're not an easy guy to reach, but I think this is an important topic and one that we don't get a chance to cover very much. I've used your terminology and already warned my listeners to, you know, be skeptical but not irrational.
Right.
I'm very skeptical also. I don't know if we need to explain what irrational means, but let's start off with who you are, where you come from, and give us kind of a recap of your National Press Club appearance in 2001. I think that's a good way to start.
Well, I'm actually an emergency physician. I'm a medical doctor whose uncle was the senior project engineer that designed the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. And as a little boy, I learned of some things that, quote, don't exist, as they say, but do, and began to look into them. By the time I was running this busy emergency department in North Carolina, I had dug into this subject far enough to discover that there were a core of military and intelligence witnesses that I had networked with who knew about classified super secret projects dealing with what the public erroneously call UFOs. I say erroneously because they are not unidentified and they do not fly in any sense of the aerodynamic sense of flying. Mm-hmm. But be that as it may, between 1990 when I started the project and between 1990 and 1998, we began to identify an enormous amount of data and government documents and military and intelligence insiders to these sort of projects. And we initially just had a few, and then we had 40, and right now we have between 450 and 500 of these fellows and some ladies who are have been in various divisions of the government. Virtually every agency and every branch of the military who have been present at projects or during events where unusual aircraft have been tracked or have been retrieved or have been worked on and studied or, if you will, reverse engineered. In 1993, I was asked to provide the first briefing for the then incoming President Clinton's national security folks, including a meeting with his first CIA director, James Woolsey. And Jim Woolsey and I spent about 3 hours discussing this problem, during which he informed me that neither he nor the president were being allowed access to these projects, which, of course, at the time I thought was a prevarication. Turns out it was not. It was true. And subsequently, we began to move this information not only through the executive branch but also to members of Congress. In 1997, we had a gathering of a number of congressional offices and chairmen of committees to hear and meet some of these military witnesses who are, you could best call, her whistleblowers, as well as to get briefing materials that we'd put together previously for the president. And we have been asking the executive branch as well as the Congress to hold hearings or to issue an executive order in the case of the executive branch to allow this information to begin to come out so that the public could be informed about the truth of the subject rather than all the mythology that you see in the media. And also so that some of the technologies that have been developed in these so-called black projects could begin to be put to use so we could get off of fossil fuels and say adios to the Middle East oil mess. So it's been a very long project. Back a few years ago, it overtook my medical career, and at this point I'm working on this all the time, trying to get the information out and trying to, on a parallel track, discover how these technologies are operating, and our group is working on some experimentation with building them.
You mentioned that you briefed former CIA Director James Woolsey. You've also briefed members of Congress, members of the European Union, members of Parliament in Japan. You've also briefed the Vatican. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, we've had very senior meetings throughout the world over the last 14 years, certainly also at the United Nations. The previous Secretary General, Boutros Ghali, his family, and in fact his wife and I spent many hours discussing this issue because, you know, although it's snickered at a lot, as it should be, because 99% of everything you see in the big media and the entertainment field on this subject is just absolute rubbish, there's a core of information hidden in all those bushels of rubbish that is very important and very true. And I believe a lot of the information that the public comes across is then allowed to be propagated because it kind of sets up a deflection from what's really happening. What's really happening is that exactly what Eisenhower warned us about, and when he left office in January of 1961, when he said, look, there is a military-industrial complex that it will get out of control and be a threat to our security and to our democratic principles. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. But he said this, we've learned, because he had been stabbed in the back by large corporate and financial interests that had hijacked a lot of the supposedly national security and military and intelligence projects related to UFOs, because they had discovered that, in fact, these things were operating off of a type of physics that would completely enable us to transition out of oil, gas, coal, nuclear power, and centralized utilities. Well, that's a mouthful, because what we've just done is said it was about a $7 trillion part of the world economy that could be made redundant quite easily.
Right.
Well, not easily, but it would be a difficult transition, but it could have been done. So a lot of people who have thought, and this is true of some of the military men I work with, they thought they were working for the national security. What they found out as time went on is that they were actually working for a transnational group of, to put it nicely, mafiosi-type characters who were really trying to keep this stuff secret, not because it was important to the national security, but because it was important to their power base and
right.
to their ability to maintain a grip, a lock on the global economic and oil situation. So once they discovered that, they began to defect in droves. And as I said, we have people should get on our website, disclosureproject.org, because the witnesses we have are not people behind a curtain, you know, with an altered voice. These are people who are name, rank, and serial number, fully identified. We have their DD-214s, which are their discharge forms from the military. We have corroboration of their accounts in most cases. We have government documents that have been authenticated that corroborate much of what they're saying. Not all of our witnesses have government documents to prove it, but many of the cases do. So we're not talking about stuff that's, you know, a little granny in tennis shoes who saw a light in the sky. We're talking about people ranging from brigadier generals to air traffic controllers to astronauts and cosmonauts who have seen this stuff and who we have gotten to come together as a team and begin to educate the public on it.
Well, you mentioned again you briefed some pretty high level people, and
right.
you say that presidents have been kept out of the loop, which
not all of them, some,
and I would imagine you were speaking of Bill Clinton earlier in that particular time frame, in that timeline.
Well, yes, so see, when we started the project, Papa Bush was still president,
okay.
but by the time we actually got ourselves organized with a critical mass of intelligence and witnesses, Bill Clinton had taken the oath of office. And then, of course, the people who knew him very well were following my work already by then. And a friend of the of his first CIA director, who was James Woolsey, was also following my work and had been doing so clandestinely, it turned out, for
sure.
a couple years, and asked me to provide a briefing for him.
But my question is, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, and
sure.
I plan not to do that too much today, Dr. Greer.
I'm sorry.
Who does know? Who are, if we can just start from the top of the pyramid and work down, you mentioned these mafia-type global corporations that are hoarding this knowledge.
Right.
You mentioned, of course, people that are out of the loop, but, of course, pointing to other people that are. Have you traced this back to who might be holding on to this knowledge and keeping it from such high-level people?
Yes, we have a list. In fact, I have personally met with a number of these people who are inside this covert management group. And about 40 or 50% of them now agree with our team that this information should come out. There are others who are adamantly opposed. You can imagine it's a very, very difficult call because there are two things. One is that the information itself would transform both the world economy and the
yeah.
course of human civilization, but also I think a lot of it, there's certain inertia that goes with this kind of secrecy, and that is, it's very hard for these groups to come clean on stuff that they've kept secret using illegal and extra-constitutional means to do so, up to and including murder and lying to U.S. presidents and lying to congressional committees. I mean, we're talking about very serious breaches of the law. So
who's in the loop? I mean, can we name names today?
We can, if you'd like to hear some.
Yeah.
For example, if you look at such as the Lockheed Skunk Works group. There are folks inside that group who have been working on this problem for decades. Northrop has a group dealing with this. A very key part of the operations during the 90s were, and even up until recently, has been Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC, out of La Jolla, California, and a former National Security Agency head, Bobby Ray Inman, Admiral Inman, went from that position to being on the board of SAIC. There are other people who work with him very closely over many years, who are also involved in these projects. Senator Goldwater, before he passed away, and I met for some length of time, and he very much wanted this information out, but had also been denied access. He did know that Curtis LeMay had known about it, and when he went to Curtis LeMay, when Curtis LeMay was the commander of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, he was told point blank by Curtis LeMay that he would be court-martialed out of the military. That is, that Senator Goldwater would be court-martialed out of the Air Force Reserve as a general if he ever made an inquiry about it again. And that at that point, Curtis LeMay himself was being denied access to a lot of the operations that were going on at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where some of these devices had been retrieved and were being reverse engineered. So,
can we put people like David or Lawrence Rockefeller in this loop?
Well, actually, that's a more complex story. Certainly, David has had information. Lawrence Rockefeller was a friend of mine, and he was wanting to have this information brought out. And was supporting strategically much of what we were trying to do in the early 90s. However, he was surrounded by corrupting influences that stopped him from being able to do too much. You have to understand, a lot of times these emperors don't have any clothes, it's a more complex problem than that. You certainly have other interests that are involved. There are covert groups within the Vatican, for example. There are cells within the Opus Dei group who have knowledge and have control over this. And then you have the Liechtenstein family. And I personally met with Hans Adam von Liechtenstein, who's the reigning crown prince of Liechtenstein. And, of course, the huge banking and financial empires that are centered in that also have had an interest in keeping this sort of thing either falsely presented to the public, and i.e. there's marauding aliens from outer space having sex with the people in trailer parks in West Virginia, et cetera, and so on, ad nauseum, or they just completely try to keep the information quiet. The problem is that you can't really keep it quiet because too many people have seen too many things,
right.
But you can put a spin on it that creates the silly season of just absurdity, which then deflects any serious scientific or institutional investigation.
Well, we've seen that tactic being used on us, Dr. Greer, of course, as we try to put out uncensored news, and, you know, they call us kooks, and they try to compromise us and to neutralize us, and if that doesn't work, we get legal threats and even physical threats sometimes, just we don't fully get the message. They never try to pay us off. This is something I always complain about, Dr. Greer.
That's attempted here, but we're not for sale. So.
I'm going to move back just a space or two, because I know that you're also the founder and CEO of Space Energy Access Systems.
Right.
How does that correlate with the Disclosure Project?
Well, it's an outgrowth of the Disclosure Project, much like the Rocky Mountain Institute spun off a number of corporations looking into energy issues. What the Disclosure Project eventually found was that the raison d'etre for the secrecy was very much centered in these energy and propulsion systems that had begun to be understood in the 40s and 50s, and certainly by the late 50s and 60s were fully operational. And I'm talking about electrogravitic and anti-gravity type systems, energy generators that extract energy from the space around us, not outer space, but the space in your room that would generate all the energy you need for your home or business without any connection to a centralized grid or the burning of any fuel. These sort of advanced physics, propulsion, and energy generation systems were at the core of the secrecy. And so in 2001, after the 9/11 events, this was the event that indicated to us that we were going to have to step up the pace of moving information disclosure into the development and disclosure of an actual working prototype. And now it may be a primitive generation 1.0 version of what Lockheed Skunk Works is sitting on. However, what SEAS is doing, and by the way, our website for that is seaspower.com, seaspower.com.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is identify inventors and scientists who are legitimate and credible, who have prototypes of devices that illustrate the physics and the principles of this type of energy generation. These have been around for many years. It's understood that probably Tesla had this sort of system. Certainly, Gray did. We know that there are other people who have discovered the same thing. I mean, the laws of the universe are universal, and there's nothing new under the sun, in a sense. What CSEES is doing is identifying inventors who have this information and need an umbrella of both protection and security and funding to be able to get them out to the public. So that's what we're actively pursuing right now with CSEES, is the development of these energy generation systems.
All right. Well, that's very complicated, and we're digesting it as we speak. Dr. Stephen Greer with us from the DisclosureProject.org. We will be taking your calls here. It's 13.570. That's 13.570, second hour of Deadline Live, with our guest today, Dr. Stephen Greer from the DisclosureProject.org. And I do want to say this for folks who maybe won't be able to join us. I encourage you to go take a look at this. And again, I encourage you to keep an open mind and, of course, be skeptical. I just have to put a little disclaimer on this, because as we're letting Dr. Stephen Greer tell his story, I'm kind of holding back on some of the questions I might put together later. So I encourage you to go back to the archive so that you can get the full picture. But again, Dr. Greer, I mean, I want to keep an open mind here. I want to be on board with you. I have a lot of research myself, which I want to integrate into this interview. But by no means, if people have just listened to the first 20 minutes, do I not? I just want to make people perfectly aware of and clear that I'm still digesting some of this as well. So I'm not endorsing this by any means, at least at this point.
Yeah, I'm still digesting it, too.
I understand. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier about suppressing technology, and, of course, this is a whole can of worms itself, dominating intellectual property here on this planet today.
Right.
And I know that, you know, keeping control of ideas is you know, the info war. It's really, really important. In fact, so important that Mayor Amschel Bauer, who was head of the Rothschild family, once said that, you know, I guess in a reporter or somebody had asked him, you know, what are you most afraid of? What are you afraid that might bring down your empire, your House of Rothschild? And he said, well, not gambling and women, really, but I'm afraid of innovations. I'm afraid of ideas.
Right.
And I truly believe, Dr. Greer, that one idea could change the face of the entire planet. And if you don't keep those things locked up in a cage, in a can, not giving access to the populace, you have a pretty good chance to control the population for years to come.
Well, that's right, and it's interesting because some of the people we've worked with have been from the former Soviet Union and who are rather senior cosmonauts and people who are in the military there, including generals and colonels. And one of these officials said to me a few years ago, and it was rather poignant, he says, you know, we're all slaves on somebody's plantation on this planet right now, and it just turns out the plantation that's running over there in America is a little more prosperous than the plantation that we've got here in Russia.
Yeah.
And I laughed, and I said, well, there's some unfortunate truth to that. I would say that at this point that the corruption is so endemic and pervasive that it's rather disturbing, because we're not talking about, you know, something like an act. A lot of people have wanted to tell me, well, you know, don't you just think it's just been overlooked that this stuff is going on? I said, no, not a chance. I mean, I've met with too many people in high places, as it were, who know what's going on, but they don't want to take on those sort of interests. And in fact, a good friend of President Clinton's came to my home shortly after, I guess it's a month or two after I met with his first CIA director, and said, you know, look, we very much agree with what you're saying, that this information needs to be brought out and these projects need to be brought under some kind of legal control. But he said, you know, if we do this, we're afraid that the president will end up like Jack Kennedy. And I burst out laughing, thinking this guy had to be joking. And he wasn't.
Yeah.
He wasn't joking at all.
Well, I can see why. I mean, we're talking about, folks, roughly an estimation, because you can't truly know, but we're talking about $40 to $80 billion a year in black operations to cull this technology and to hide the technology and to potentially use it.
Right. It's actually closer to $100 billion. And, in fact, when I met with the chief investigator...
Why don't you hold on to that, Dr. Greer, because we're just about to go to our second hour. We'll have a short segment and then a much longer segment after that. Dr. Stephen Greer with us, folks, thedisclosureproject.org. Deadline Live. We'll see you on the other side. Stay tuned. Joining us today, Dr. Stephen Greer from the DisclosureProject.org. He's also the founder and CEO of Space Energy Access Systems. Disclosure Project is, by the way, a not-for-profit research project working to fully disclose the facts about UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, and also classified advanced energy and propulsion systems. He's devoted his time and life to this project. Dr. Greer, by the way, has been on Coast to Coast, of course, with George Norrie and Art Bell, It's been on the Larry King Show, CBS and BBC, and been broadcast all over the world. He joins us now live. We're lucky to have him today, Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer, I just have to ask you, what did Larry King think about your information?
Well, he was very interested.
I met him before. He looks like a guy who knows a lot more than he's telling.
He does. And, in fact, well, one of the things is that when I was on his show, since I was still working with the Clinton folks and the CIA director, I didn't mention that. And, you know, he's the guy who likes to kind of know what's really going on. And so after the show, I was in his makeup room and stuff, and we were talking, and he said, you know, what did you mean when I asked you, you know, what does the president know? And you told me that that I shouldn't comment on that, but you should ask the president. I said, well, it means that my group has been the group that's been primarily involved in providing that information to the White House for the last couple of years. And he looked at me and he said, well, why didn't you say that? I said, because they're still there and we're still hopeful they'll do something constructive and what have you. But, yeah, Larry King very much was interested in this subject from a personal point of view. And most people are. I mean, I think there are very few people in the world who haven't heard something from someone they know where it would indicate that there are things going on that don't square with the conventional wisdom that you see in the big media.
Yeah.
And by the way, the only thing I have found more corrupt than these large corporate military intelligence projects and the financial interests behind them is the big media. The big media, in my opinion, is the central reason for why the public is so misinformed on many, many issues.
Well, you mentioned mafia types that don't want this information disclosed, and I will go ahead and put it out there that, you know, of course, corporate media, Chicago Tribune and BLO and Viacom and General Electric and you name them, I mean, this really gone down to a few hands of these multinational corporations. So they're controlling the information, which is, of course, according to their directive and directives like Operation Mockingbird, which is to control what people think, and the testimony from guys like Jose Delgado, Dr. Delgado, in front of Congress, saying that you cannot allow the people to think for themselves, or you'll have anarchy on your hands. So that's pretty much, we know where they're coming from. The questions I have for you when you come back is, how far back does this go? How far can we trace this potential extraterrestrial presence? And, well, that's just the tip of the iceberg. More with Dr. Stephen Greer and your calls right after this. Deadline, folks. Welcome back to the program. Dr. Stephen Greer with us again. The disclosure, in fact, just simply disclosureproject.org. You can very simply do a search for that, and you'll pop right in it, so you don't even know how to spell it. A ton of documentation and information there by Dr. Greer and his colleagues. Stephen Greer, before we move forward and we take some calls here, we have loaded phone lines from all over North America for you today. I need to ask you, when you got started doing this, I mean, you were a doctor and then you moved into this really controversial issue. Of course, disclosure pretty much says it all. You're out there telling the world about this type of information, doing so now on a radio show. What happened to you once you decided to do this? I mean, have you had... It would seem to me that the powers that be wouldn't want you to put out this information. Have you had death threats or anything?
Well, yeah, we've had this sort of thing. Initially, there was an offer for me to get pulled inside these projects and was offered a senior position. Of course, I turned it down. Being an emergency and trauma doctor, I've seen people killed over 50 cent beers. I certainly have seen a lot of tragedy in my life, and I know that whatever risks I have to take to get this information out, if we succeed in getting it out in the way that we're planning to, and more importantly, get these technologies into beginning to be used by our civilization, it is worth more than a 50-cent beer. People have lost their lives over trivialities for centuries, so I don't worry about that.
Yeah.
I will say that we've taken precautions by having an enormous number of powerful people on the inside of these projects who support what we're doing. Read between the lines of what I've been saying, and you're going to see that obviously it is not a monolithic situation where everyone is opposed to this coming out. In fact, I've been told by senior members of these covert programs that they very much would like to see a group like ours succeed because they painted themselves in such a black corner that they don't know how to quite get out of it.
You mentioned Lawrence Rockefeller. Obviously, you have friends in high places, so that's not going to hurt. Your phone sounds awful, Dr. Greer. I don't know if you're speaking directly in it or if you're on a speakerphone or if it's being
jammed. No, I'm not on a speakerphone, but let me just adjust it.
Yeah, I want to make sure that
is that better?
That's much better. I want to make sure that this comes through as cleanly as possible.
Sure.
Because a lot of people are going to go to our archives and try to listen to this program
right.
much later. Last question I have, and then I want to take some of these phone calls that are patiently holding for you. There might be a line open, folks, 800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443. How far back does this go, Dr. Greer? How far can we trace, what's the word, extraterrestrial visitations? How far back can we document it?
Well, I mean, people have evidence that I think is not terribly strong, but it would be indicative that this has gone on for thousands of years. Certainly there are, for example, carbon-dated cave drawings of what look like extraterrestrial vehicles that are just like what we see in the skies today.
They found a modern fighter jet sculpture in a Mayan dig, I think, about 3-4 years ago.
Yes, and also there have been, the whole thing about the Nazca lines in Peru, and there are a lot of sort of archaeological indications that perhaps this is an ancient rather than anything modern phenomenon. But what we have done is to go back to the 30s and 40s forward, up and through even up to the present time, and identified people and evidence that is current and that is dispositive, in the sense that in any court of law or anyone who would objectively review the material, they would see that there is something legitimate going on that has been hidden from the public and, in fact, even from our senior elected officials. So, but I do think it is something that's been going on for a very long time.
Well, some mention the work of Zachariah Sitchin, of course, in decoding the Sumerian text. Of course, there's mention of the Nephilim in the Holy Bible, where it talks about these gods coming down from the sky in clouds and mating with the daughters of men.
Right, man.
But how do we discern between disinformation and real information? I mean, there can be information such as this planted, I guess, to make us think that this could exist. How do we discern between the two?
Well, the same way you do with anything. You have to go to the evidence, and you have to look at it objectively. My own personal opinion is that I try to stay out of things that are speculative or that are conjecture, simply because it's a very slippery slope. What we've tried to do, if you look at this, for example, we have a book out called Disclosure that people can get at disclosureproject.org. It has the transcripts of the name, rank, and serial number of almost 70 of these military and intelligence witnesses, along with the government documents. Anyone who can read, English, and in France, actually, it's been translated and it's distributed now in France as well, we'll see that this is very, very strong. Not only are the government documents very strong and clearly indicating that this material is accurate, but when you have a dozen separate air traffic controllers in military and civilian sectors who have tracked these objects going thousands of miles per hour and making right-hand turns without decelerating, and their testimony is consistent, even though they don't know each other,
sure,
dating from the 40s all the way up through the
year. How do we know that that isn't some type of man-made terrestrial technology that we're just not aware of, and maybe they're fooled into thinking that it's something that it isn't?
Well, because, in fact, this is a very good point. I think a great many of them are man-made and are based on things we've studied that are from off-planet. But the documentation that exists, I don't think anyone believes that we had this sort of thing operating in the 30s and 40s, mm-hmm, when we still had vacuum tubes and things of this sort. And on top of it, there are people inside our witness pool who have been on retrieval teams where they have actually retrieved the bodies, the actual physical extraterrestrial,
sure,
bodies.
I mean, you had the Nazis and the famous Foo Fighters, and then you had,
sure,
well-known Nazis. In fact, Dr. Dorenberger, who was, I believe, the go-between between the Pentagon and NASA when NASA first started, was also a German SS officer, I believe.
And Hermann Oberth and Werner von Braun,
yep,
all those people actually had knowledge of a lot of these advanced physics. But that begs another question. Where did they get the ideas from? We have indications that in the 30s there were some of these non-human objects that were tracked and were retrieved that had been downed using advanced electromagnetic weapon systems that did exist at that time. So this goes back a long, long time. And at this point, for most people, it's a very muddy picture because I think a great many of the things that people see, for example, in the high desert of California, or launches of these anti-gravity prototypes out of the area around Palmdale and the Edwards base facilities that are out there, where Lockheed and Northrop have very extensive subterranean research facilities.
Yeah.
And we have people who have been in these facilities and have actually worked on designing these advanced aircraft and spacecraft that are using these propulsion and energy generation systems that I've been talking about.
Yeah, one of the things actually that my research turned up, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, is that the tax money made to build the location for the super collider underground never actually housed the super collider. That project was canceled, and some other black ops project was taking place there underground.
Correct, and this is often the case. For example, if you look at the B-2 stealth bomber, although say, well, these cost $1 or $2 billion apiece, that actually isn't true. It's just that the large amount of the money that goes into those projects goes to the identified projects, and then maybe 80% of it or 75% of it will be funneled into these other unacknowledged special access projects, is the proper term, or super secret black projects, where they're working on these more esoteric and exotic systems. So it's a very complex, and it's very much, you know,
right,
it's like a page out of the Mafia book where you have a storefront, and, you know, it looks like it's an Italian restaurant, and, you know, money's coming in and out the back door, it's all going.
Right.
So very much this is how a lot of these operations are going
forward. And you mentioned, you know, esoteric knowledge. I mean, that's also another contention, is that this technology has been around. I think some of these people make the same contention, that it's alien technology or extraterrestrial technology housed in, say, the libraries in Alexandria, which were burned to maybe hide the evidence. I mean, there's a lot to this, and I'm speculating, and I know you're trying to just put out evidence here. I got to go to these calls, Dr. Greer, or my listeners are going to kill me. I just saw a couple of them drop off. Folks, call right back. We're going to go right to your calls, 800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443, to talk with Dr. Stephen Greer and myself. Let's first go to Richard in Texas. Richard, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on. Dr. Greer's first talk with you. I heard you on another program one time, and you gave a chapter and verse explanation of why the secrecy oaths are basically illegal, because they're extra-constitutional and, well, illegal.
Right.
So I was wondering, I hope I got in on the show late. I hope it's not repetitive, but I was wondering if you could repeat that argument for these secrecy oaths being illegal that they've taken.
Right. Now, I want to be clear. What he's referring to are the secrecy oaths that people have been bound to in corporate and government programs specifically related to this subject.
Sounds like counter-allegiance, but go ahead.
No, well, but here, it's basic constitutional theory and legal theory. If an operation is going forward illegally and outside the Constitution, where they are lying to the constitutionally appointed officials, whether it be the president or the Congress or whoever, that operation cannot then cite the rule of law to enjoin other people, whether it's the National Security Act of 1947 or anything else, to keep their operation under the cloak of secrecy. They can't break the law and then use the law for their own protection at the same time. Now, they've been doing that for decades because no one's called them on
it. On many levels, yeah.
Our attorneys, and we have some very good constitutional attorneys that I've consulted with on this, some top drawer guys, have said that, well, Dr. Greer, you're absolutely right. So back in 1997, I wrote an assessment of this and sent it to all the officials in our government, saying that basically people involved with these projects could come forward and speak publicly and could not be penalized, because the people who would try to penalize them are themselves rogue extra-constitutional
groups. We know that whistleblowers in the past have not been protected on every level. We have to go to break. We're going to come right back. Good call, Richard. Race for space is really just almost a side issue to something like this. It's very, very important, and so important that I'll be doing an entire show on this arsenal of hypocrisy, as it's called. It's very, very dangerous. The life of the planet as we know it is at stake, folks, and that's what we're talking about today. Of course, with us is Dr. Stephen Greer from the DisclosureProject.org. And yes, they have books, videos, audio tapes that you can purchase to get more familiar with this information at DisclosureProject.org. Dr. Greer, I'm going over my notes here, and I think you inadvertently gave me some information that I like to use, and that is the multinational corporations, again, these mafia types, as you call them, withholding information from the presidents, knowing in general that presidents come and go.
Well, this is true. Not only the presidents come and go, but I have done briefings, for example, the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the head of Intelligence Joint Staff, who invited us to come in with some of our inside whistleblower witnesses to brief them, because when I had given, for example, and your listeners need to listen carefully to this story, when I'd given the head of intelligence joint staff, what's called J2, the project code numbers, which we have, and names of some of these operations, he looked into it. He did eventually find, hidden within the bowels of the Pentagon, one of these projects. And he wanted to be, quote, read into it. Read into means briefed on it. And he was told, sir, you do not have a need to know, and we cannot brief you on this project. And he says, well, if I don't, who the hell does? I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, this is an admiral.
Yeah.
So by the time I get to this meeting with a few of my witnesses and an Apollo astronaut who walked on the moon and a few other folks, this guy is, of course, hopping mad, not at me, but at the situation. This man personally turned to me and said, if you have identified a lot of insiders who know about this, you have my permission to go to the media and put this stuff out there, because this is a rogue, illegal operation. So a lot of people ask me, who gave you the authority to go forward in 2001 with all this top-secret testimony? I said, well, no less a figure than someone who's sitting at that position at the Pentagon. So not that I needed his permission by any means, but because we had already done our own assessment that this was an illegal and rogue operation. But it gives you a sense of how screwed up system is.
Yeah, owners don't often tell CEOs or presidents of the company everything about the company. I mean, their job is to steer the ship. Was Edgar Mitchell the astronaut you were speaking about?
I can't comment, confirm, or deny that, because this is a meeting. The other people participating were confidential. So
I got a ton of questions for you, but let's go back to the phones with all these great listeners patiently holding all over North America here. Let's go to Fred in Philadelphia. Fred, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Thank you. I don't know what position Dr. Greer takes on the existence of actual patents of technology like anti-gravity and others, but there are certainly applications for those types of patents, and they've been sitting around for 5 years or more. What is going on with the normal application and granting
of patents? Do you have any specific patents in mind?
Sure. I have an application here. It just says anti-gravity machine with a classification that does not fit into any existing U.S. Patent Office classification.
Could just be a guy in his garage, I think, maybe, too. But
no, but what I'm saying is that it's a certain bellwether, is a certain it's an intellectual tool that we have to use, is that the elite cannot contradict themselves. If they are, then their credibility falls down. So if they have if there's an application for anti-gravity, and it hasn't been granted, either has to be granted or there has to be a reason why it isn't granted.
Dr. Greer?
Well, this is a complex issue, and it's probably beyond the scope of this show, because the answer is a very long answer to what he just asked. But remember that most patents of this type end up getting either acquired or black boxed. And when I call black box, it means that they are usually given a Section 180, 181 of Title 35 of the patent law, which allows for a seizure of anyone's patent and all intellectual property if it is deemed to be of significance to the national security. Now, because the patent office has been used by these corrupting influences, they have killed, seized, or intimidated people in the past. So we know this because I have several insiders in the patent office, one of whom lost his job because he was a whistleblower on this sort of thing going on in the patent office, Tom Ballone. And so what we can prove is that, yes, people have had inventions. They have put them through the patent office. They have either not been granted or at times they have been seized. More often than not, they will also be acquired. For example, a large corporation that sees that this could be a threat to their interest will offer X millions of dollars to some little inventor who stumbled across this, and usually they will sell out, and if they don't, then they're threatened, and then they do sell out. People say, oh, come on, that can't happen. It sounds like a novel. But it happens every day, in fact, and I know people personally that have had that happen to them. Now, this gets into the whole question of seize right now. I will say this, and I'm being very careful. We're working as we speak on a motor that would be one of these, not anti-gravity, but one of these free energy generators. I have seen it operate in another country, and it was legitimate. if we get this thing going, we want to announce this to the public quickly so that it can't be seized. Because I'll tell you this.
Hey, you could do that on this show. We've got to go to
all
break.
Right, we'll
Fred, if you like, you can hang on. And then Ian, Anthony, Dan, Ed, and others patiently holding. We'll get right to you after this break. Dr. Stephen Greer with us. Folks, stay tuned. 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Jack Blood with you, folks. Deadline Live. 3:33 p.m. Central Time, the 26th day of January, 2005. Joining us today is Dr. Stephen Greer, director of the DisclosureProject.org, and we're talking today about high technology, about potential intergalactical presence here that's being covered up by the government. This is all part of the Disclosure Project, as well as weaponizing space, which is just, I think, one of the byproducts or the components of this whole thing. Before we went to break, we had Fred from Philadelphia. Fred, are you still with us, and was your question answered sufficiently? Fred's not with us. Let's go to Ian in Canada. Paul, you ready? Let's pull up. Ian in Canada. Let's try Fred again. That's really professional, Paul. Thanks. Fred in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Did we answer your question?
Yes, you answered it, but I wanted also to mention that I can endorse his statement about Dr. Herman Oberth and the fact that he was the head of a division that did, he was the chief reverse engineering expert for a particular division that was part of the Defense Department. I don't know what exactly, what
right.
division it was.
Right. Right, this is true. And in fact, you know that if you get our disclosure materials, you'll see that Wernher von Braun, for example, his last personal spokeswoman prior to his death is now on our team, and she has testified that not only did Wernher von Braun know of these things, but she also said that on his deathbed, Wernher von Braun begged her to warn the world that there was an agenda to try to hoax various threats to our national security for the aggrandizement of those who were in power, including the eventual hoaxing of a threat from outer space
right.
and the attempt to weaponize space, that in reality, before this was way before 9/11, and her testimony, which was recorded in the year 2000, she said that basically these programs were going to have the Cold War, they would retire it, and then they would try to unite the world around a global terrorist threat and nations of concern, and then after they had played that card, they would try to roll out a hoaxed threat from outer space.
Well, let me read this quote, and thanks, Fred, for the call. Of course, a very intelligent call, as always, from Fred in Philadelphia. I want to read you this quote from Henry Kissinger from something called the Bilderberg Conference. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Sure, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to read it for the listeners who might not have heard this. Today, America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to be delivered from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government. That was Dr. Henry Kissinger, Bilderberg Conference, Evian's France, 1991. Dr. Greer?
Yes, and this is exactly the kind of thing. A lot of people can't believe these sort of things are actually thought of and said, but it's very, very true. They're sort of a, if you will, a type of fascist or transnational Nazism that has survived the end of World War II and the Cold War, where there are some folks who would like to see the entire world united, not in peace and an ever-advancing civilization, but in sort of a very large military lock on the human race. And the way they can see doing that is stampeding the population through a series of orchestrated and staged managed events that would redound to their control
yeah.
through the induction of fear and what have you. And
seems
I think
to work.
This is what we've seen. And it's very effective. It's highly effective.
Do you
in
think,
fact.
I mean, we cover this a lot on this program, and we've researched and speculated to the high heavens on this topic of 9/11. Do you think that 9/11 could have been used and maybe was done for that very purpose?
I think there's a good chance of it.
Do you, you're not advocating, your group isn't advocating disarming the population or world government or any, I guess, of the platforms of the United Nations?
Well, it's a complex issue. I mean, you know, do we need a new world order? Yes. Do we need the new world order that quote was referring to? No. We're an increasingly integrated world. There's
nothing
wrong
with
coordinating
entities. Doctor, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Who could we trust to head that new world order? Who could we ever trust?
That's exactly right. I mean, certainly not the guys running it now. Mm-hmm. And because what their objectives are not so much about ensuring the peace, but ensuring a state of fear so that the controls can stay in place, as the masses can be controlled through fear very effectively, as we have witnessed in the last 3 or 4 years. I think that in addition to this, there's an enormous economic issue here, not only in terms of maintaining the, even if we melt both polar ice caps, but maintaining the juggernaut of the fossil fuel economy and the centralized power grid, which is really a completely unnecessary. Before I was born, we didn't need it.
Yeah.
But on top of it, you've got approximately $1 trillion a year going into military-industrial laboratory spending.
Yeah.
Well, they would like to grow that from $1 trillion to $2 trillion to $3 trillion a year. The way to do it is to create and hoax, in my opinion, a threat from outer space. And I think that's why, if you look at the sort of the psychological propaganda that's out there in the UFO literature and in Hollywood about all things extraterrestrial, it's gone from warm and fuzzy, the movie E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, to, they're all coming here to eat us for lunch. And I think that there's this sort of siren song of greed that's behind this whole fear-mongering on this subject. And that's why I tell people on this subject, 90% plus of all the stuff I see, I believe, is some form of nonsense and disinformation. And so I'm a very, very big skeptic. At the same time, I have to tell people, a skeptic is not someone who's completely taken leave of his senses. The evidence for the fact that there's something going on is overwhelming by any objective observer who would care to look at the materials we've put together.
We got to move here, man. We're running out of show, Dr. Greer.
Sure.
Two off-air questions, and if you can just give me quick answers to these so I can go right back to these calls. I'm going to get everybody in here just in a second.
Uh-huh.
First off-air question, quick answer if it's possible. If the technology for perpetual motion exists, why not show it?
Well, it will be. As soon as we are able to obtain something that we're satisfied is robust enough, we will very quickly get it put into security, get it replicated. It will be tested at three independent labs, and then it will be announced.
It will be shown. Second off-air question, if we can't trust Kissinger and his friends to be in charge of this new world order, who should, in your mind, be in charge or control of a new world order?
Well, I don't know that anyone should be in charge of a new world order. I think that it's going to organically evolve. I think the whole problem is that there's an over-centralization that's occurred from the wrong people. There's nothing wrong with international cooperation and dialogue. The question is, what checks and balances are in place? How are those people put into office? And what's their real agenda? And that's the issue.
Checks and balances were made to be broken, as we've noticed here in this country. Let's go to Ian in Canada. Ian, thankfully, you are finally on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Thanks. There's so many aspects, Jack, to this issue.
Try to be succinct, man. I got to get all these calls.
Yeah, I don't know what to say, but except this. What I found in my experience and study of this issue is that there's one clash of issues, and that's between those who see this as a combination of evolutionary pseudoscience and Star Trek space opera, and those who understand it from a religious point of view, that we are subject to invisible celestial hierarchies warring invisibly in the heavens and driving history for the last 6,000 years. I just wish that researchers would give a little more respect to that scriptural / supernatural view and stop dismissing it as mere cultural contamination.
Wow. You said a mouth. Great comment, by the way. You should print that up. Dr. Greer, how does this work? How does the spiritual integrate with this? And if you can comment on Ian from Canada.
Well, I'm sure there is a spiritual dimension to everything. And human beings, don't forget, we have physical bodies and we have souls as well. And I'm sure this is true of other life forms. I think a lot of what has been presented as some sort of big galactic battle out in space isn't quite at all accurate. I think that there are spiritual dimensions and there are physical dimensions, and there are places where those two intersect. So the issue is rather complex. But
yeah.
Have you ever been out to outer space? How do you know there's no battle out there? Because not only the Bible, but other scriptural sources, Indian texts tell us that there is a battle out there. So
there's a battle, and I think that it's a metaphorical battle. I think that if you understand the technologies we're talking about, you could not actuate the use of these technologies for anything resembling a battle or a weapon system without terminating an entire world each time
which
it
means
was employed.
That's exactly right, which means this technology isn't exactly neutral, as everybody likes to play it off, and there has to be some type of a spiritual
doctor.
Element here.
How I saw most people killed? Good old-fashioned steak knives and hunting knives. It's the consciousness behind the technology that drives how it's used.
That's
and
right.
So the ultimate issue is a spiritual one, and I can tell you that.
Without spiritual restrictions, without some type of a moral compass, I mean, you're going to misuse this type of technology. Ian, thanks
right.
for the call. I got to roll.
I would point out that a spiritual compass isn't necessarily a religious one. I think most of the organized religions have been corrupted by influences and powers that have nothing to do with truth or spirituality, but again, control.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Control. Security equals control. Anthony in Arkansas, you're on the line with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Thanks for taking my call, Jack. I've got a few questions for Dr. Greer. For one, first of all, I wanted to kind of relate a story that my dad had told me when he was a young man.
Right.
He had an experience with a UFO that he said hovered close to where they were and seemed to hover over a power pole.
Right.
And tended, it looked like it was, in his mind, sucking energy from the pole. Now, that was what he said. Is that consistent with anything that you've heard of regarding these energy propulsion systems?
Yes, I certainly have heard of a type of inductive event where these objects, and of course this could have been early man-made one, have,
sure.
Quote, been nursing on high-voltage lines. And also off of other points of electromagnetic stress or electromagnetic power. So, yes, we have many reports of this.
Okay. And then also a few other questions regarding the video that's on RBN Live of the video of you and all these other folks at the press club, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was somebody mentioned in passing that they thought there may have been some alien civilizations on the backside of the moon. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, we have several witnesses who saw some of the classified downloads of the lunar orbiter, which was the mapping and surveillance spacecraft that went up before we landed on the moon in the mid-60s, where the images showed clearly artificial structures, some recent and some very, very old, that were in the terminator section and the area right between the dark and the light side of the moon,
okay.
And that these had been mapped and were very well documented. And we have more than one witness who has seen those images, one who had a top-secret crypto clearance and was at Langley at a facility being run by the National Security Agency back then. And there was
I think
no
you've
such
just
agency.
Hit the apex of my open mind, but... I'm doing the best I can.
All right.
Thank you, Anthony, for those great questions. Let's go to Dan in Vegas. Dan, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Well, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. My question is more, you know, just basic. How do we make any money off of this, doctor?
Well, I love it. Get it right back down to the good old. I think that the whole civilization that we have in front of us is really relatively impoverished. And let me say what I mean. We live in a world right now where we think we're high-tech, but all of our high-tech integrated circuits and computers and fiber optics and satellites and what have you, televisions, are running off of fossil fuels, most of which, 58% of which, is coal-fired power plants like we had in the 1800s. My point is that these technologies and the technologies that CSIS is working on and that we are in the process of developing and testing as we speak would be the technologies that would run the entire infrastructure of the Earth without the need for fossil fuels or centralized power grid. It would not only result in an enormous growth in world economic activity, but it would decentralize power literally and figuratively, if you get my drift.
Yes, I do.
So, you know, it will be a tide that will lift all ships. It will have to be done in a way that is as least destructive as possible. I regret that this wasn't didn't happen by the time I was born in 1955. It certainly could have been done by 1955.
Well,
but here we are in the year 2005, and we need to do something about this.
Well, there's nothing you could have done about it before you were born, but there's something you can do about it during your life.
That's
now,
what we're
now,
working on.
Now my point
so I gave up my medical career and a quarter of a million dollars
up,
a year to do this. So,
trying to squeeze this other
so right now there's no money in it.
Yes. Well, my point is you are working.
Our purpose.
Yes, you are working on a project now that you're about to unveil. That project undoubtedly is going to put dollars through your bottom line. How does one contact you to see how one can participate in this?
Contact me at SeasPower, SEASPower.com.
Okay, seas like the seven seas.
Yes,
right.
I've been to the site. I've been to the site and saw the numbers there. Love the show. Let you go.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that contribution. Let's go to Ed in Connecticut. Ed, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Dr. Greer.
Yep.
I'm surprised to be talking to you. Wow, it's probably the only time I'll get a chance.
All right.
I have so many things to say. I'll start with Clifford Stone, one of your witnesses.
Right.
He's had countless interviews, countless. I've read tons where he's talked about evil aliens and good aliens, and your bias has always been that there's been good aliens because they simply haven't come down here and blown us up or something. Mm. What I'm simply saying is that it's unreasonable to think that they're all good, just like it's unreasonable to think that they're all evil and that there's probably a little bit of both. And these are some of the very witnesses that you're using, and they're claiming this. Yet I've heard that you have this bias that they're all friendly.
Well, it's not a bias, and I know Clifford Stone personally, and that isn't his assessment. I think that
if I could somehow contact you, I can show you this stuff. I mean, he said it in countless interviews even before this project.
But it really, in a sense, I tell people, let's take that as to be true. Are we going to resolve the problem down the barrel of another high-powered laser weapon system?
Oh, no, absolutely
here's the
not.
Issue. Here's the issue. If that's true, and we're still breathing the free air of Earth, they're at least more restrained than humans are, number
right.
one. Number two, the resolution of that problem is not going to be fighting fire with fire. Unfortunately, if you start dealing with technologies that have the ability to go faster than the speed of light, that are scalar, nonlinear weapon systems, you're not dealing with the ability for any of the interests involved to survive an outright conflict. So this then speaks to a larger question, is that who are we and what role do we have in establishing a good future for us and for the future of humanity?
I completely agree. It's a spiritual question.
That's the issue.
But what I'm saying
is, at the same time, I'm very, very worried about the manufacture of an apparent threat when there's no objective evidence that there is a threat, and that has been done by people who would benefit enormously from stampeding the world into this idea that there are frightening influences out there that we need to spend trillions of dollars to fight.
Ed, I'm sorry, man. We got to go to break, and I'm glad you got a chance to ask the doctor a question. We'll try to squeeze in Sam and Helena and whoever else in the big finish coming up next on Deadline Live. Folks, stay tuned. What a show, folks. So we're going to have you back. Dr. Greer, if you can make the time, I'd like to talk about the weaponization of space, and I didn't get to things like Vision 2020 or
right.
this Star Wars hoax that's been played upon the world and
sure.
all of these
sure.
players like Gorbachev and Reagan and others.
Right, right.
So, I mean, how can you do this in an hour and a half with commercials?
Yeah, you really can. We're just touching the highlights, but
yeah.
I appreciate having the time to talk. And, you know, when and if we get this system up and running, maybe I'll get back on and we can do a live feed from the laboratory with some scientists there who are testing it. I can tell you what we've observed so far, something that has a completely stable energy input that stays charged with the thing putting out hundreds or even thousands of watts of free energy.
Wow.
We have seen it operating already. If we can get this thing stabilized, it would be one
well,
of
listen,
the most important technological
The door is open for you, Dr. Greer. I mean, if you'd like to do that live test on this program, we have millions of people that can be out there in touch. We can all come together on that. I would love to extend that opportunity to you. I have one couple of calls. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more anyway to get a last comment here. I have to ask you this because when it was known that I was going to have you on the program, of course, I got a lot of letters and people warning me about Dr. Greer, and they made some claims that you were a disinformation specialist, maybe working with the intelligence services. What would you say to those detractors?
Well, it's hilarious because if it was true, we would sure have a lot more money than we have.
People say that about me, doctor.
But,
so.
I mean, it's been said, look, you know, paper doesn't refuse ink, as my father-in-law used to say. We're doing this the best we can with what we've got. And all I can say is that there's no way that we're doing this for anything except out of our own conscience and trying to get the truth out and also help move our civilization forward.
Okay.
So that's what we're all about.
Well, thanks. Let's go to Jeff in Colorado, where I believe on the NASA building there it says Masters of Space. Jeff, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Greer. And quick question is, A, does President Bush know anything about it? And two, can't you do a presidential order to get this information released? And three, can't we take it back militarily, like invade Lockheed Martin, take back what is ours? You know, that should be back to the American public.
Well, the answer to the first question is that the current president, Papa Bush, is sort of a mid-level operative within these circles.
Yeah.
The current president doesn't know too much. Cheney and Rumsfeld are very involved and have been for decades.
I bet.
Yes, we could go and get these things back, but it would take a president willing to do an executive order to do it. Clinton didn't want to do it because of fear that he, in fact, might end up assassinated. And I laughed when I first heard it, and I'm not laughing anymore.
Well, and again, we end up at Ron Paul for president. But Helena in Texas, last word with Dr. Stephen Greer today. You have about 20 seconds.
Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Greer, I've just heard for years that there have been lots of UFO sightings around the poles, and I just wondered if perhaps maybe you think that they may be coming from the center of the Earth.
I don't think they're coming from the center of the Earth. I think there certainly have been historically reports of underwater and underground bases where they have been able to stay and for periods of time.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the point of our
center of the Earth technology. In fact, there was a famous explorer that went to the North Pole, I believe, and found some evidence of a civilization living inside the Earth.
That was Admiral Byrd.
That's right, Admiral Byrd.
Right.
Hey, thanks, Helena. Great call. Dr. Greer, again, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, thedisclosureproject.org. Anything else, Dr. Greer?
Just to clarify, it's disclosureproject.org without the V.
Yeah, no
and the corporate site is easepower.com.
Doctor, I will be in touch with you very soon. We'd love to have you back anytime
right.
You can make the time. Thank you so
right,
much.
Man. Have a good one.
Best of luck to you. Watch your back.